Mr. Pop.
The views and opinions of this show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of this network and its affiliates.
It's time for another edition of the Sport Diehards with your host, Steve Itzkowitz. Hello, everybody. Happy Martin Luther King Day. It's another edition of the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS, Facebook.com/Sport Diehards, Facebook.com/Radio AFS, RadioAFS.com. We're being brought to you by Gallagher's, as always. And we have plenty to talk about. Hopefully, I have some guests joining me momentarily, but if not, I'll hold the show. We're going to go to 8:30. It's an hour show because I've got something to do this evening, so we're going to go to 8:30 here. And the call-in number is 646-668-8467, 646-668-8467, and then enter 1, and you'll be put into the call queue where I can activate your mic, and we can go at it over this football extravaganza that happened over the weekend that began with a thud and ended with a kaboom. Two predictable games on Saturday, two not so predictable games on Sunday. I want to begin the show here with lessons learned from the 2017 NFL Divisional Playoff Round weekend. And let me admit up front that I am having a bit of pain right now, and I'm pushing on with the show. So if there are points in the show where I sound like it sounds like my voice is fading, please forgive me ahead of time. I've got a hell of a day. I've got some soreness in my prostate and my abdomen, and going to the bathroom today has been quite an adventure. I will not give you the details unless you want me to, and if you do, call me and let me know, and I'll certainly be more than happy to give you the details. Pretty gory. But nonetheless, I'm pushing on with the show here today because I'm committed to doing this show week by week for Radio FS because I love talking sports with each and every one of you. But, of course, that's when people calling in would really, really, really be great because I certainly want to hear what you have to say while giving myself a break every now and then. So, again, the number is 646-668-8467 and enter 1-646-668-8467. In terms of lessons learned from the weekend of the 2017 NFL Divisional Playoff Round, first lesson I learned is never, ever, 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 ever pick against a hot NFL team. And when I define a hot NFL team, I'm talking a team that entered the playoffs and had to play in the wild card round, but won a handful of games coming in. You would have thought that these teams were so hot that they would have gotten the first round bye. No, that wasn't the case. In this case, the Green Bay Packers on a 7-game winning streak and the Pittsburgh Steelers on the same came in, played the wild card round, and then faced two opponents in the second round who had first round byes in the Kansas City Chiefs going up against the Steelers and the Dallas Cowboys going up against the Packers, and the Packers and the Steelers reigned victorious. And I happened to pick the Cowboys and the Chiefs in those two particular games because I felt like their teams were more complete. I felt like the bye week favored them. I felt like home field advantage favored them. Especially in the case of Kansas City, I felt like, and I'm going to kind of level Kansas City momentarily because there was some information I wish I had on them. Might have influenced how I that pick had I known about the information ahead of time, which is on me. So I'm going to go on a rant on them momentarily over their playoff history and how utterly futile it has been. So futile, they shouldn't call this team the Chiefs. They should call them the Peasants because that's how they're playing. But I digress. Nonetheless, the Chiefs, with Andy Reid being the master of taking advantage of a bye, couldn't put away a Pittsburgh Steelers team that couldn't score a touchdown. And the Dallas Cowboys fell behind to the Green Bay Packers early and managed to make a furious comeback in the second half and put themselves in a position to win that game, even though Green Bay was able to pull it out at the end behind the leg of Mason Crosby. But that's lesson number one. Never bet a team in a series of one-game playoffs. In the NBA, you typically can predict which team is going to win a series because usually the better team will win. It's not a one-game playoff. It's a best of seven. So usually the best team in any given series will win no matter how hot a team may come in, because the NBA momentum is very fickle, because you have to play and beat a playoff opponent at least four times before you can advance. That's not the case with the NFL. It's certainly not the case with the NCAA tournament. Therefore, what I recommend to you for next year, or maybe the rest of these playoffs, is don't bet against the hot team. Because I'll tell you right now, if you go against a hot team playing well, who has won their way into the playoffs and is playing as if they're not even aware it's the playoffs or how pressure-filled the playoffs are, you're taking your life into your own hands. You're taking your reputation into your own hands. I shouldn't say taking your life, because no one should die over this unless you take it way too seriously, but I digress. The point is, don't go against the hot team as much as you possibly can unless you get some kind of information that will give you full confidence that you're making the right pick if you happen to pick the team that is playing the hot team on their home field advantage. So that's the first lesson. The second lesson is rookie quarterbacks don't win Super Bowls for a reason. Dak Prescott was attempted to become the first rookie to make a Super Bowl and win it. And a lot of people felt the Cowboys were going to do that. But Dak Prescott, and by the way, the Cowboys' loss is not Dak Prescott's fault. He struggled in the first half. He really picked it up in the second half and played like a guy that has been in a number of playoff battles previous to this one. He was great. And later on, I'm going to answer the question if there is a quarterback controversy brewing in Dallas with him and Tony Romo. Because a lot of people say, well, if Romo was in there, they would have won it. If Romo this, if Romo that. And I'm going to have a response to that momentarily. And I'll put it to you this way. I'm not a big believer in what ifs, because what ifs don't count for crap. Okay? They don't count for crap. So I'm going to talk about that momentarily. But the reason why Dak Prescott is not going to a Super Bowl to have a chance to be the first rookie to win one is because his team is not quite ready to get there as of yet. And typically when you need to draft a quarterback, it typically means either your quarterback wasn't playing that well or you had an injury and you had to play a guy like that. And that would usually indicate a team that has got a weakness or two that is going to keep them from making such a run. And that's the case with the Dallas Cowboys. And in this case, it's defensive. And I'll certainly talk more about that when I go into the game and kind of break down as to why the Green Bay Packers won and why the Dallas Cowboys lost. But Dak Prescott, but rookies winning a Super Bowl, particularly rookies that are thrust into starting, are usually playing on teams that are either good or not so good. But if you're going to win a Super Bowl, you got to be great. Okay, you've got to be great enough to do that, because it's one of the toughest things to win in all the sports. It's one of the toughest things to make in all the sports. They say the NFL divisional round is the best and most competitive weekend of foot there is. And, well, that was half the case with Sunday's games being competitive, not so much Saturday. So if you're a rookie quarterback and you happen to win the Super Bowl, then you're entering a team, quite frankly, and they're putting, they're giving you the keys to the car that is ready to make that run. I didn't feel like that Cowboys team was ready to make that run. Therefore, I did not pick them to win the Super Bowl. I had them going to the Super Bowl to lose to the Patriots eventually. But they're not even going to get to the Super Bowl. So Dak Prescott being a rookie on a team that struggled the last couple of years and all of a sudden just busted out, mostly thanks to him and Zeke Elliott, another rookie, made this team a lot better than people expected them to be, myself included. But next year, if the Dallas Cowboys can fix what ails them, and I'll talk about that momentarily, then Dak Prescott could have a chance to get back to the playoffs and possibly win a Super Bowl, but won't happen as a rookie. So that is the second lesson learned. The third lesson learned is the team that has the best chance to win in Foxborough is the team that plays there. You know, everyone is talking about, well, this team can go into Foxborough and win. This team can go into Foxborough and win. Keep in mind, the Patriots have to go into Foxborough to play these games themselves, because not all the Patriots players live in Foxborough. Therefore, they have to go into Foxborough to play a game at Foxborough at Gillette Stadium to try to win a football game. That's the team with the best chance to win at Foxborough. We've been hearing it all year long. Which team can win in Foxborough? Well, the answer is real simple. The team that plays there 8 times a year and 2 or 3 times in the playoffs, perhaps. In this case, it'll be 2 times with the first round bye that they just had. that's the team with the best chance to win in Foxborough. So a lot of people ask the question for next week, and Pittsburgh win in Foxborough. Well, perhaps. But I did the guess that the team with the best chance to win in Foxborough is the team that Pittsburgh will be playing against. That just happens to play their home games, Foxborough. That will be the third lesson. To all the people asking the question out there, your answer is clear. The team with the best chance to win in Foxborough is the team that plays their home games in Foxborough, and that is the New England Patriots, particularly when the offensively challenged, and I'm being nice when I say that, Houston Texans come into town and lay an egg offensively, lay an egg so much so that that egg doesn't even have a yolk in it that you can cook and at least make breakfast out of. Goes into Foxborough and tries to win a game against a team that has the best chance to win in Foxborough. So that's the third lesson of the weekend. The fourth lesson of the weekend, the Seattle Seahawks coming into Atlanta was completely overrated. You don't win games on reputation, ladies and gentlemen. I know the Seahawks have gone to a couple of Super Bowls. I know how tough they are. I know how unpredictable they are. I know all that stuff. Here's something else I also knew coming into the weekend. Their fatal flaw was a flaw that actually killed them in these playoffs, and that is not being able to mount enough of an offense with an offensive line to make it happen with against an Atlanta Falcons team that is better defensively than people give them credit for behind the exploits of Vic Beasley Jr., who had a whale of a game, and an Atlanta offense right now that is even stronger and more efficient than the Green Bay Packers offense was against the Cowboys. And that's saying something. So to those people next year that want to pick a team based on reputation, reputations don't win football games. Teams win football games, matchups. And the matchup between Atlanta's defense and Seattle's offense, particularly that offensive line, was a proverbial and utter and complete and total mismatch. So the people that suggest there, all the experts that suggested, I don't know, maybe they were trying to sell this game up, maybe they knew. I say tell the goddamn truth, all right? Tell us the truth and tell us exactly how the game is going to go. Tell us what is most likely to happen. Don't try to sell these games. They don't need to be sold. It's the NFL. People are going to watch them because it's the NFL, for God's sakes. These games don't need to be sold. So the pundits that suggested that Seattle had a chance also suggested that I've got a chance to win the lottery on Wednesday. Ain't going to happen, okay? Don't tell me a team's got a chance when they have a defense that is missing perhaps the most important member of the Legion of Boom, Earl Thomas III, has an offensive line that can't block, and as a quarterback or thrown to a receiving core that, quite frankly, isn't that good, and a running game that has been very inconsistent. Yeah, I know what Thomas Brawls did in the wild card round, but as I learned a long time ago, you're only as good as your last game. You're only as good as your last podcast. You're only as good as your last speech. You're only as good as the last thing you did that was significant. And that's the case with the Seattle Seahawks. So the Seahawks were completely overrated coming in. And quite frankly, anyone that suggested they had a chance to win this game, especially in the world of all the alleged experts that there are out there, quite frankly, needs to be slapped in the back of the neck and then given a stern lecture about common sense and making predictions on game based on what is most likely to happen. I know you may not know exactly what's going to happen. I get that. But at least tell us what's most likely to happen. And that didn't happen. And as a result, people thought that Seattle had a chance to win the game. And Atlanta says, oh, yeah? Well, Atlanta says, is that right? And they go out and win by 16, and the game wasn't even that close, 36-20. How about that Seattle defense, huh? Giving up 36 points to the Falcons, even though their reputation has said otherwise. Reputation don't win games. Teams win games based on matchups, execution, and the desire to win. Seahawks certainly had the desire to win. They didn't have the matchups, and they sure as hell didn't have the execution. And that was the fourth lesson learned from NFL wild card. I'm sorry, NFL divisional playoff weekend. I'm still on wild card weekend. It's all four home games won. All four home teams won, unlike the season before when all four road teams won. I was 2-2 for my picks. 50%, and that's actually pretty good. I would have liked to have been 3-1. And when I get back after the break here, I'm going to take a little break here. I'm going to go into each game, takeaways from each game, why is team love, as well as offer commentary, particularly strong commentary for one team known as the Kansas City Chiefs. That's coming up next. And also, and I'll tell you, and also another thing, why I love to be wrong when it comes to one of my picks. Why being wrong feels so good. And that's coming up next. In the meantime, you're listening to Radio AFS, the Sport Diehards on RadioAFS.com, Facebook.com/TheSportDiehards. And I'm going to go ahead and play a little bit of music for you so you're not listening to Dead Space. Here we go ahead and play Die Hard. And the song has 8 seconds of silence at the start. So let me start playing it right now for the first extended of talking here so we can avoid Dead Space. Enjoy Die Hard by PG Heat, because certain teams died hard this weekend. And we'll be right back. You're listening to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS.
Right,
don't
90,
go.
Here we go. Let's go to work. 90 on one. Ready? Inside hand of Garrison Hurst.
Spot me out in lot E any given Sunday. Rain or shine, or catch me nighttime on a Monday. Bleed red and gold, San Fran in my soul. Won 4 Super Bowls, while I was 4 years old. In a 10-year span, had the goal line stand. And Joe hit Taylor on a 10-yard slant. Ran the Broncos off the field in a rout. Then watched primetime, hot step into the house. Lately it's been a drought, no Super Bowl team. But I was still a fan when we was 2-14. 10 rows from the end zone, you can find me. A hell of 49er faithful right behind me. Hit like Lot and got hands like Wright. But hustle like Young and get high like Dwight. Yeah, win or lose, I'm a ride hard. No bandwagon jumping, I'm a die hard. Hey, I'm a die hard. Yeah, I'm a die hard. Win or lose to my squad, I'm a ride hard. Broke for 90-plus on 90 plus when Brian Young and Stubblefield put that rush on him. In 98 when T.O. dropped 4 against the Cheeseheads and squeezed in the game-winning touch on him. Now I'm watching Frank the Tank tote the rock. Behind an O-line, a first-rounder's holding block. Burning in the lane, he made the end zone the habitat. And Crabtree lifting off the catches like an acrobat. Sideline to sideline, that's T. Willie. Hard hitter, got me tripping like, did he really just make that wide-out throw up on the field? No 100-yard rushes, our front seven is real. Harbaugh stepped in and put us in the mix. Now ESPN say the Niners is legit. Yup, win or lose, I'm a ride hard. No bandwagon jumping, I'm a die hard. Hey, I'm a die hard. Yeah, I'm a die hard. Win or lose for my squad, I'm a ride hard. Lower box, section 1, row K, seats 7, 8, and 9. You season ticket holder, yeah, I put that on mine. Fairway the fans used to bag us all the time. See us doing good, now they trying to bandwagon ride. But don't confuse me with one of them, cause you ain't never seen me with none of them. Who got it better than us? Nobody. 49er tattoos cross their whole body. Live by the code, faithful fans go by. In the lot, tailgating with the banjo guy. Cross the goal line, rest hands go high in the sky. It's 49er pride till I die. And if you a 9 or 2, then real talk, put your ones in the air. Rest in peace, Bill Walsh. Yo, win or lose, I'm a ride hard. No bandwagon jumping, I'm a die hard. Hey, I'm a die hard. Yeah, I'm a die hard. Win or lose to my squad, I'm a ride hard.
Young, back to throw. In trouble, he's going to be sacked. No, gets away. He runs, gets away again, goes to the 40, gets away again, to the 35, cuts back at the 30, to the 20, the 50, the 10. He dies, touchdown 49ers.
Welcome back to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. I am your host, Steve Etzkowitz. And interesting that song was written, dedicated to the 49ers. And some news came down on the 49ers today, and potentially good for 49er fans out there, and that Josh McDaniel has withdrawn himself as a candidate for the 49ers head coaching job, which leaves one pretty good candidate, the other very good candidate that I would love to see the Niners get, and that's Kyle Shanahan, the offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons currently. Now, the Niners can't officially hire them if that's what they're going to do until his playoff run has concluded. And we'll see if that happens this weekend against Green Bay, or if they get to the Super Bowl for only the second time in the franchise. And we're going to look at that game momentarily and gauge the chances for the Falcons to get to Super Bowl 51 in Houston. But I would love to see the 49ers get Kyle Shanahan, because he's obviously got a pedigree, being Mike Shanahan's son. Everywhere he's been, an offense has gotten better than before he got there. And that's all you can ask is what condition is the team in when someone arrives? What condition is the team in when they leave? Typically when Kyle Shanahan arrives, they're in bad condition. Typically when he leaves, they're in better or even good condition. And that's certainly been the case where he's been very successful in Atlanta and Washington prior, even in Cleveland. So I think if the Niners luck themselves into Kyle Shanahan being the last team here that needs a head coach, that will be a very successful head coaching hiring campaign for the beleaguered 49ers, and Lord knows. And for a franchise that has had nothing but bad news, bad news, bad news, mostly self-inflicted, this is very encouraging news. I hope they can get Kyle Shanahan. I think Tom Hable is a pretty good coach, pretty good offensive coach. But I think Kyle Shanahan has gotten to a point where he is ready to take the next step and be promoted from an offensive coordinator to the NFL coaching position, being very skilled with offense, but also being very, very, very charismatic, which you have to be as a head coach. So hopefully the Niners can get that done. And if they do, then there's going to be a lot of optimism in the Bay Area going into next season. We'll certainly be keeping track of that. And if it happens, we'll respond to that, hire on the Sport Diehards. And if it doesn't happen, we'll respond to that as well, perhaps pointing out that the Niners couldn't stumble across a head coach if they tried. So hopefully they get him. We'll certainly be keeping track. In terms of the divisional playoff round weekend games that happened here, I want to look back at each of them. The first game I'm going to look at briefly is the Houston Texans and the New England Patriots. And I love Tom Brady. Tom Brady is always suggesting that a game, you know, it could be a lot better than it actually turns out to be. He said, the Texans are not going to be easy because Bill O'Brien and Mike Vrabel used to work with Bill Belichick. Bill O'Brien coached with Bill Belichick. Obviously, Mike Vrabel was one of his players back in the 2000s when they won Super Bowls, and now is a linebackers coach for the Texans. And Tom Brady, you know, being the master of saying one thing and then going on the field and proving something else, showed that the Texans didn't have a prayer in hell of beating the Patriots that day. The Patriots covering the spread at 34-16, and you know, there was a question I posed in the advance of the show: how close are the Texans to getting over the playoff hump? Well, as close as they are to having a quarterback in there that can actually get the job done, because we know they're good defensively. Lamar Miller is a decent running back. DeAndre Hopkins is one of the 10 best receivers in the NFL, but they just don't have a quarterback. And in a quarterback-driven league, not having a quarterback in a quarterback-driven league is like not having dressing for the salad. It's just not going to work. This is not going to work. You're going to be dry and bland at the end of the day, kind of like the Texans' offense coming out of the dome and having to go to Foxborough. Boy, maybe the question people should ask is the team that has the worst chance to go into Foxborough and win. That would be the Texans. You know, that'd be a little truth in advertising there, aside from saying which team has the best chance to win in Foxborough, which I already answered, the team that plays at Foxborough themselves. So the Texans are going home, having won a playoff game, which is good considering they haven't done that too much. But as long as Brock Osweiler is under contract for them and Tom Savage is the backup, and there's a reason why he's a backup, then the Texans are going to be years away from getting over the hump and taking advantage of what is otherwise a pretty good team. But a pretty good team that won the AFC South with a 9-7 record. So it is a mediocre pretty good team in that they're barely above mediocre. But if they're not careful, it could go mediocre. So I'm not surprised at the Patriots one. I'm not surprised at what Tom Brady said was pool tom, no pun intended, pure tomfoolery on his part. Way to go, Tommy boy. You almost have me fooled. Not quite, though. Then we get to the Falcons and the Seahawks. The Falcons have the best offense in the NFL right now. And defensively, there are a lot of people there better than people give them credit for. Mind you, going up against Seattle's offense, particularly when that offense has to go away from CenturyLink Field, is not the most daunting task in the world. But nonetheless, give credit where credit is due. Because at the end of the day, you have to outscore the other team, but you also have to keep a team from scoring enough to outscore you. And that's exactly what happened with the Falcons. And that's just the bottom line. The bottom line for Seattle is that until they get an offensive line, you know, Russell Wilson is one of the best quarterbacks in the game, top 10, maybe top 5. That said, if he's playing behind an offensive line that can protect him, meaning he's having to improvise a little, because you like his ability to improvise, but you'd also like him to be able to stand in the pocket, survey the field like Aaron Rodgers would, and make throws, and only make throws on the run if he has to. But if he's having to do that constantly over and over again, it's not a good thing, even if he has the capability of doing so. So my takeaway for Seattle is that you're going to have to rebuild that offensive line, and you've got to get receivers in there that can make plays to go along with Wilson and retool that running game. Because Thomas Rawls may be your long-term answer. He may not be. He has been inconsistent. He has been injury-prone. That said, regardless of who's running the create holes or protect Wilson, it's not going to matter any. So Seattle going into this offseason needs to address the offensive line. Atlanta, we'll see what they can do defensively against the hottest team in the playoffs right now, and that would be the Green Bay Packers, and we'll preview that game momentarily. Then we get to the Sunday games. Dallas and Green Bay. The best game of the weekend. A game that was dominated by Green Bay in the first half. Only to see Dallas make a stirring and furious comeback in the second half to tie up the ball game and put themselves in a position to win it. Let me be very clear. This alleged controversy in Dallas, this whole, well, they would have won it had Tony Romo been in there. To which I say, prove it. Okay, let's rewind the game and let's put Tony Romo in there. Oh, wait, we can't do that because there's no rewinding time. See, this is where human beings get tripped up, and this is where a lot of fruitless discussions happen on radio shows. The what if. What if this? What if that? Ladies and gentlemen, the what if. Don't count for crap. It's crap. There are no what ifs. There's only what is. And Dak Prescott played like a guy that had been in the playoffs for years now. He played with poise. Even the things he said after the game, you know, if, you know, talking about, you know, maybe we could have gotten off to a better start, or they were just the better team, or maybe we left a little bit too much time on the clock to give them, you know, so on and so forth. The man is talented enough to play quarterback in the NFL, but his character and understanding of the game and his maturity, you never got that with Tony Romo. I mean, Tony Romo's been mature throughout this whole thing, accepting that this is Dak Prescott's team. And that's really the guy you need to pay attention to, because at the end of the day, if Tony Romo's saying this is Dak Prescott's team, why are we continuing to suggest that the game would have been any different had Tony Romo played? That wasn't the case, and that wouldn't have been the case. If anything, it might have been worse, because if the Green Bay Packers go up like they did in the first half against a Tony Romo-led Dallas Cowboys team instead of Dak Prescott, guess what? There might have been an interception or two, because we all know that Romo was prone to interceptions, particularly in games where he had to throw just to try to catch the team up, and that was the MO of the Dallas Cowboys for years. It wasn't until 3 years ago when DeMarco Murray had a big season with 1,800-plus yards, and their offensive line came together if they drafted Zach Martin over Johnny Manziel, that they actually showed the balance they could have, and it protected Tony Romo from being the turnover machine that he has been in the past. Now, not turnover machine on the level of Ryan Fitzpatrick or Case Keenum, but nonetheless, a guy that if the Cowboys fell behind and he had to throw their way back into the game, there was going to be a pick or two. And how do you know that wouldn't have happened against the Green Bay Packers? I'm thinking that probably would have been the case. Dak Prescott goes 24 of 38 for 302 yards and three touchdowns. What more could you ask from a guy? Okay, especially in his first playoff game, for God's sakes. And you think he's going to get any worse? No, usually people get better the more experience they get. That's the way it works. So people would suggest it would have been different with Romo are nothing more than people that love Romo, and I understand that, but also don't believe in Dak Prescott because maybe they haven't paid attention. And that's what I'd like to hear you say. You know what? We just don't like Dak Prescott. We love Tony Romo. Fine. I get that. What he's accomplished for the Cowboys, considering he was undrafted, and what he's accomplished to throw more touchdown passes and throw for more yards than Troy Aikman, is nothing short of remarkable. So I understand why you love him. But if you don't love Dak Prescott, then you're not a Cowboys fan. You're a Romo apologist. And for that, you should apologize because you're basically narrowing down a team to just one player, and that's not – you can't do that with the NFL. One player does not a team make. One player doesn't win a game in the NFL. It doesn't happen. You can do that in the NBA. A player like LeBron James or Kobe Bryant is fine and can carry you to a victory or two in a playoff series. But not in the NFL. Bell, everything's got to be going well. And the Cowboys, why they lost that game – couldn't get off the field on third down, especially with third and longs. How many passes did Aaron Rodgers complete on third down in which he needed 8 yards, 9 yards, 12, 11? They were 6 and 11 on third downs, which doesn't look too bad considering how bad it looked during the game. The problem was for the Cowboys is that they couldn't keep Aaron Rodgers from completing a pass on third down that needed to go at least 8, 9, 10, 11 yards in order to get the first down. Even a mediocre defense should be able to handle something like that. But the Cowboys just couldn't do it, and that's their key. Offensively, they are set. Dez Bryant had a great game. Terrence Williams is an excellent number two receiver. Obviously, Zeke Elliott is their primary running back, and they have Alfred Morris behind him. And Dak Prescott isn't going anywhere. And, oh, yeah, did I fail to mention that offensive line, the best in football right now? Dallas, what was exposed about Dallas in this game is their inability to get off the field on third and long and to prevent the Green Bay from converting third and longs into first downs and not getting enough pressure on the quarterback. Because at one point during the game, I mentioned that they need to get more pressure on Rodgers and make him throw before he wants to. That never really happened in this game. They picked him off once, which is a miracle in its own right, because Aaron Rodgers doesn't get picked off very often, particularly at home. But at the end of the day, they couldn't get enough pressure on him to really disrupt the timing he had with his receivers. And he was able to survey that defense and carve them apart like a surgeon would. And that's the bottom line. So if Dallas is going to come back next year and improve upon the success they had this year, they need to get a guy that can get consistent pressure on the quarterback. Greg Hardy wasn't able to do it. They drafted Randy Gregory, but he hasn't been able to play much and will not play at all next year because he's suspended yet again. So the Cowboys need to go out and get themselves a pass rush and work on that secondary, because if their secondary can play better and they can get a pass rusher a la someone like Von Miller or Vic Beasley or someone like that or Khalil Mack, someone that can really consistently put pressure on the quarterback, then you can see Dallas in the Super Bowl next year. Absolutely, because offensively they are loaded with everything that they have is defensively that they need to work on. For the Green Bay Packers, what can you say? And as I said, there's never pick against the hot team. They're the hot team coming in. Aaron Rodgers ripping up. And Ty Montgomery, who is this guy? A wide receiver playing running back, a couple of rushing touchdowns in this game. Their offense is so diverse and so varied. And Jared Cook, with the catch that he made on that third and 12 yesterday from Aaron Rodgers, the catch that he made was absolutely unbelievable. I still don't believe it. When I saw it, I was thinking, did he actually catch that? On his knees, towing the line, keeping the ball. Just an incredible catch, an incredible throw by Rodgers, too, who was under pressure at the time but was able to run away from it and make virtually a pinpoint throw down the field to Cook, who just came up with the catch, arguably the catch of the year. It was that good. Randall Cobb had a really good game. The receiving corps in general had an outstanding game, and Ty Montgomery proved to be a very pleasant surprise being potent in the rushing attack, at least getting a couple of touchdowns, even though the rushing attack was not the story for the Packers yesterday. They passed way more than they ran. But why not? They were going against a Cowboys team that was weak in the secondary against the pass and against a team that couldn't get enough pressure on Rodgers. So why not be pass-heavy in that situation? I don't think they could get away with that this weekend against Atlanta. We'll talk more about that momentarily. But in the meantime, Ty Montgomery was a pleasant surprise, and the diversity of the Packers' wide receiving corps and Rodgers' ability to deliver the ball, whether he's on the run or whether he can stand in the pocket, survey the defense, and step into his throws, just shredded Dallas apart yesterday. And that will need to continue against Atlanta. In terms of the Kansas City Chiefs and the Pittsburgh Steelers, well, I picked the Chiefs to win because coming into the game, Andy Reid had a record after a bye week of 16-2. He and Bill Belichick are the absolute best at maximizing a bye week for his team and being successful. Yet, his team yesterday couldn't score a victory against a Pittsburgh Steelers team. Arguably the most potent offense in the AFC, couldn't score a single touchdown. 6 field goals. I remember when the 49ers lost to the New York Giants in the 1990 NFC Championship game, 15-13. 5 field goals by Matt Barr for the Giants proved to be the difference because their defense was that good. Well, Pittsburgh's offense is not nearly as good. Defense is not nearly as good as that Giants defense was. But going up against Alex Smith, and here's what stood out to me yesterday. Alex Smith passed the ball 34 times for 172 yards. 34 pass attempts, 172 yards. I'm not kidding when I say that. Ben Roethlisberger, on the other hand, passed the ball 31 times for 224 yards. So Ben Roethlisberger needed less pass attempts than Alex Smith to throw for more than 200 yards. Now, Smith did have a touchdown, but he also had some other touchdowns that he should have gotten but missed guys in the end zone. And then you had the play at the end of the game with Eric Fisher, the offensive line, being charged with holding and basically tackling James Henderson, in which Travis Kelce went nuts after the game. And all I got to say, Travis Kelce, and let me preface this by saying that you call the game consistently regardless of what point in the game it is. We seem to have gotten into this habit that, you know, you call the first part of the game in a certain way, you call the middle part of the game in a certain way, and you call the last part of the game in a certain way. And the last part of the game, I'll say in the last 3 minutes. That's not the case when it's blatantly obvious that a man is being – that an offensive lineman is holding an opposing defensive lineman or a defensive player, as Eric Fisher did with James Harrison, obviously, you've got to make that call. You can't just not call that just because it's the final 3 minutes of the game or a team is trying to make a two-point conversion to try to tie the game, and Travis Kelce went nuts. And clearly his emotions made him not understand what was actually going on. He couldn't apply logic to the situation. Okay, that was a perfectly legitimate call. It is not legitimate just to call the last 3 minutes of the game any different than the first 3 quarters of the game. You call the game consistently throughout. And when you see something as blatantly obvious as that, you got to call it regardless of what point in the game it is. So Travis Kelce going, I'm not quite sure about that. He ought to get a pretty big fine about what he said about official number 51, by the way. I would look for that to go down because of what he said. And it was a pretty funny rant at the end of the day, but Travis Kelce, you need to settle down and understand that your team wasn't good enough offensively. You couldn't beat a team that couldn't score a single touchdown with you having home field advantage after a bye week with a head coach that knows how to take advantage of it. Which leads me to a point about the Kansas City Chiefs. I would never, ever, ever pick them to win a home playoff game ever again. Why? They haven't won a home playoff game since 1991. You know what happened that year? I graduated from high school. I'm 44 years old. The Chiefs have not won a playoff football game at home since I was 19 years old. How is that possible? How do you do that, Kansas City? Their last playoff victory was against the Houston Texans a couple years ago, and that was on the road, 30-0. It was, they dominated Houston in that game, but it was a road game. If you have Kansas City playing at home on a bye week against a team, particularly a team that's hot, as Pittsburgh was coming in, you've got to pick against them because they can't win a home game. And maybe they won't win a home game until they cut bait with Alex Smith. I respect Alex Smith. He left the 49ers, not under the greatest of circumstances, but handled it with class, has had a pretty good run with Kansas City. But as I pointed out, he's not a big play quarterback. He needed 34 passes to pass for 172 yards. Ben Roethlisberger needed 31 to pass for over 200, and that was an off game for him. Alex Smith is not a guy that is going to take you to the promised land. The Chiefs have got to completely retool offensively because they're letting a really good defense down. When you got guys like Tom Bahali and Justin Houston who are proven at putting pressure on the quarterback, Derek Johnson who makes every tackle in sight, Eric Berry who's an excellent safety against the pass or the run, Marcus Peters who's a ball-hawking defensive back. You got to take advantage of that. And you've got guys like Travis Kelce, when he's not going nuts, is one of the best tight ends in the game. And Tyreek Hill added a speed element to this team this year that was sorely lacking prior to when he emerged this year, both on special teams and in their primary offense. That's what the Chiefs need to do. But to do that, you need to get a quarterback in there that can throw the ball down the field and make a defense play honest. And that's just not Alex Smith. And I know Andy Reid is a very loyal guy, but if Andy Reid wants to overcome the stigma that he has of being an excellent head coach that can't win a Super Bowl, and it hasn't been the case. He's been to one Super Bowl, and he lost to the Patriots 12 years ago. If he wants to overcome that, he has got to have a quarterback in there that is able to make all the throws and that is able to consistently pass for over 200 and 300 yards in an NFL these days where it is really easy to do that. Guys these days are passing for 4,000 and 5,000 yards in the NFL in their sleep. And Alex Smith is about a 3,000-yard passer, which 10 years ago would have been really good. That doesn't cut it in the NFL. You need more than that, and that's what the Chiefs are going to do. Otherwise, the Chiefs will continue to go into the playoffs with these home going to the playoffs with home field advantage and continue to disappoint their fans in one of the greatest home field advantages in all of sports. And I will never pick the Chiefs to win a playoff game at home ever again, at least until I feel like they make a change offensively, particularly starting with the quarterback position and go to a quarterback that has the ability to take the top off an opposing defense and stretch a defense out like your average yoga class. And that's just where it stands. They are 9-17 all-time in the playoffs. And again, they haven't won a home game since I graduated from high school. Are you kidding me? They should have lucked into a playoff win at home by now, by the law of averages, for God's sakes. So that's my takeaway from that. For the Pittsburgh Steelers, going up against the Patriots, you better make sure you score more than just 6 field goals because I guarantee you that the Patriots will take much more advantage of their home field than Kansas City has taken advantage of theirs in the last 25 freaking years. And added to this, you know, there's annual traditions every single year, one's birthday, except for mine, I was born on leap year, Thanksgiving, Christmas, taxes, LeBron James playing in an NBA Finals regardless of which team he plays for, and the Patriots being in the AFC Championship game. 6 straight years they've been in the AFC Championship game, including this upcoming one against Pittsburgh. And I like them to beat Pittsburgh because I think Ben Roethlisberger is banged up just enough. And I also think the Patriots running game with LeGarrette Blount, who led the league in touchdowns scored amongst running backs this year at over 1,500 yards, but also Deion Lewis, who has proved to be a secret weapon that they unleashed a wild card weekend against a very good Houston Texans defense. He had a really big game. They've got the balance offensively and defensively. They were 8th in total yards defensively throughout the year. Now, in the secondary, potentially you can get score on there. You can pass on them. And when they traded Jamie Collins earlier this year to the Cleveland Browns, people were like, well, what were you thinking? But ultimately they finished 8th in total defense this year. So it didn't hurt them that much, but the balance that they have offensively and playing at home, coming off a loss in Denver last year to try to fail returning to the Super Bowl yet again, they have motivation, they have home field advantage, and I think they're going to take it to Pittsburgh. I think it'll be a relatively close game because Pittsburgh offensively can't keep pace with them. But at the end of the day, the Patriots and their motivation, their balance offensively, plus being better defensively than people realize, will put them over the top 24-20 against Pittsburgh. In terms of Atlanta Green Bay, Jordy Nelson has got fractured ribs, may or may not play this weekend. And I think for the Packers, they got away against Dallas with passing the ball way more than they ran. I don't think you can do that in this game with Matt Ryan and the 13 different receivers he threw touchdowns to this year. Devontae Freeman is a running back, and another guy in there, I can't remember his name, but they have a great two-headed attack at running back, playing at home and playing with a lot of confidence, and a team that's pretty hot themselves, by the way. The Falcons came in with momentum and carried that through against against a pretty good Seattle team, although not as good as people made them out to be coming into that game, as I discussed before. But I don't think the Packers can get away with passing the ball much more than they ran. I think they're going to have a balanced attack this time, which calls into questions, is Ty Montgomery going to get those carries? Because Eddie Lacy is not going to be available. Will it be James Starks? Will it be Kristen Michelle? Who's it going to be? Because to me, you're going to want to have a balanced offense if you're Green Bay and try to keep Atlanta or limit Atlanta's opportunities offensively in terms of how many plays they run. This is going to be a high-scoring game. If you're betting in this game, bet the over on the over-under, especially if it's 60, which I believe it is. I would certainly make it. I may, actually. But it's going to be a high-scoring game. The two best offenses remaining in the playoffs. And I'd like Atlanta to win, actually, because I think Green Bay is not going to run the ball as effectively as they could. And Aaron Rodgers is going to be going up against a much different beast in Atlanta. I think he'll have success against Atlanta, but I think Atlanta will have success having a balanced attack, playing at home, but also being a team very similar to Green Bay. They understand Green Bay. They can play fast like Green Bay. And if Jordy Nelson is not available in this game, that's going to be trouble for the Packers as well. You want him to be healthy, and you want him to have a balanced attack. That wasn't the case against Dallas. And Atlanta's secondary is not much better than Dallas, but they have a pass rusher in Vic Beasley Jr., Reggie Allen, that quite frankly can give the Packers enough fits to make a difference in that game. So I'd like Atlanta to win, although it would not surprise me if Green Bay won. I'm going to go ahead and take one more break here before I respond to the Golden State Warriors pasting the Cleveland Cavaliers today. LeBron James saying there is no rivalry. Golden State had a response for that today. So I'm going to go ahead and take a quick break here. And I'm going to go ahead and play Trent Bogey and Greg York Accountability Class by MC Nolan for the next 4.5 minutes. I'll come back with the response to the Cleveland Cavaliers pacing against the Golden State Warriors today to wrap up this show. You're listening to Radio AFS and the Sport Diehards on RadioAFS.com. Don't go anywhere.
Just following orders. I'm not going to get into that. Allow me to reintroduce our coach. His name is Noel. We didn't measure his dick. First off, I want to say it's not a reflection of Vic. We appreciate all he's done, but now he's exiting quick. Without getting into specifics, this is less of a risk. This is a 34 dive on a 2nd and 6. This is an early morning drive, unsuspecting it's slick. The process is elaborate. It's a complex plan of action we're enacting. It's labyrinthine. Jim handled it well. He managed himself. We're happy with Kaepernick passing the belt. Cunningham Randall is glad he could help. What an example of cramming the film. Our roster's not filled up. Our all we want built tough. We're planning to return to pounding the rock till dusk. We're going to be Godzilla, half dragon, half Tomzilla. Our fans are bandwagoners, only Ram fans are worse. But there sure are a lot of draft amateurs who don't think crap is the answer, obnoxious punk. I'm not going to get into specifics. All I know is from a coach standpoint, we needed to find our coach, and now we have our coach. And that was our goal all offseason, to find the next coach of the San Francisco 49ers. And I'm sure Jed can enumerate on that a little bit. Jed?
Fuck yo, Shanahan. Fuck yo, Fangio. All that matters to me is we have a classy coach. I wanted a teacher to start a tree with some branches, bro. A consummate leader. Dude, leave his mustache alone. He's accountable. Trent's accountable. I'm accountable. That's why I let Ray McDonald go. Get caught in an affair? You can blame it on Lowell Cohn. Or the massage parlor on a prank gone out of control. One DUI or two, we'll still support you. But I don't care what she did. You hit her, you're through. Allegedly, you're dead to me. Prove you're innocent. Even if you do, I'm still gonna trust what the women said. No more domestic issues, no more questions ensue. Win or lose, I don't want this to be the team the feminists boo. Never fear, hold the talk that the end is near. As the owner, I still expect to win the Super Bowl every year. No pun intended, but this move is gold. We're on cruise control. Smash Mouth is beautiful. Seahawks shed some tears. No matter how many uniforms of puke they sold, our stadium's newer, our restaurants are better. Santa Clara is the wave of the future. We've got the more ironic hipsters with iPods to sit there and be polite to opposing fans. That's right, we're showing class. Make sure you go online for your season tickets. They're like going fast. This is the most excited I've been since Mike Nolan's plan.
Shit, they're going to start asking questions. Keep talking.
Hey, look, isn't this cool? Check out the Wi-Fi. See how easy this is? Here, you guys try. What, no interest in checking your email? Now you see HDTV. Incredible detail. Hey, look, a Starbucks.
Excuse me, Jed. This is Lowell Cohn, legendary writer. You may have heard of me. I know for myself personally and many of the fans, we're all flabbergasted by this move. Your uncle hired the great Bill Walsh. And then after Walsh retired, he hired his defensive coordinator, George Seifert. You forced Jim Harbaugh to leave, and instead of picking his defensive coordinator, or hiring the great Jeff Garcia to instruct Colin Kaepernick on how to properly set his feet and read coverages, you promoted a defensive line coach who doesn't even have any experience at all as an NFL defensive coordinator. Why haven't you learned your lesson that I taught you about being polite to your staff? What makes you think Jim Tomsula is the answer? Isn't Ed Donatell still the better option?
I'll handle this. First of all, that was like five questions, and some of them were statements. Jim is very experienced, and he's been successful everywhere he's been, and he has all the qualifications that were...
Maybe if I offer Shanahan my firstborn, he'll be our OC instead.
Welcome back to the Sports Diehards on Radio AFS. That was quite a track there. I'm glad I discovered it, actually. I should listen to some of these tracks. 49ers, you can make it all right if you hire Kyle Shanahan. So get it done, because by the law of averages, kind of like the Chiefs should have won a home playoff game by now, by the law of averages, eventually you're going to make one right decision. It can happen even for the most inept of organizations such as yours. So get it done. The Cleveland Cavaliers got pasted by the Warriors tonight, 126-91. And what LeBron James said before the game, that there is no rivalry. To which I say, LeBron James, that sounds like an anti-NBA remark to me. Doesn't he understand how great rivalries can make the sport? Why would he suppress they're not there? Why would he suppress the fact that there is a rivalry between the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers? The last two finalists, Golden State winning their first matchup and then Cleveland winning their second matchup, and both teams being on a collision course to face each other in the finals again, which I fully expect to happen. Why is he suppressing that by saying there is no rivalry? It sounds like he's anti-NBA, and the NBA certainly made him or helped make him into the brand and success story that he is today. So LeBron James, why don't you show the NBA a little gratitude by acknowledging that you're in a rivalry with the Golden State or with the Golden State Warriors? Don't suppress that. More importantly, don't give this Warriors team any more ammo than they already need to try to dethrone you as champions this year by suggesting that they are your rival, because they have been as successful as a couple of years as you have, making a couple finals, winning one. These teams are practically the same, point shooting teams.
teams that play very, very well together, and teams that are pretty good defensively. Where does that not spell rivalry? All right, so these players make these remarks, and it's like, and they don't think about it before they do, and obviously LeBron James needs to think about that real clear. So for him to not say that there's no rivalry between the Warriors and the Cavaliers means he hasn't been paying attention. And that's disappointing for a man as smart as he is, but also a man that recognizes how great it is for the NBA when rivalries exist. That's just that's just very, very surprising to me. So, LeBron, wake up. There is a rivalry between you and the Warriors, and it's okay to admit that. It doesn't make you any less great. It doesn't mean your team has any less of a chance to possibly beat the Cavaliers or possibly beat the Warriors again this year if you reconnect in the finals. It's Martin Luther King Day. And I should probably say a couple things about that. I haven't really done it. It's been a day where I've been surviving, if you will. Quite a bit of pain I've endured today. I tried doing my job earlier. I'm an Uber driver when I'm not doing this. And it just got to a point where I just couldn't take it. So I came home. I slept. I said I was going to do this show no matter what. And I've done it, and I'm glad I did it. But then I'm going to try to meet a friend of mine to see a movie here. At least have something to feel good about today, aside from doing the show, because today has been a bit of a nightmare, to be brutally honest. And on Martin Luther King Day, you know, I have a dream today. Martin Luther King, you know, if we had the kind of courage today that Martin Luther King had back in the day, we'd probably be a little bit better off. But race relations are as bad as they've been in this country, no matter what Obama says. And I wonder what Martin Luther King would say if he was alive today. I think he'd be pretty disappointed. So in being mindful of what Martin Luther King said and how far we've come as a country in this regard, we can't continue to regress all the way back to the slave trade days. Because if we do, there's going to be real hell today. And who needs that? Life is short. We just got one chance at life. Unless you're a Mormon or a cat, you only have one chance at life. Be mindful of that. And let's treat people well, just because that's one of the golden rules of life. Treat people as you would want to be treated. That's not a color. That's a philosophy, it's a mindset, it's a golden rule. And you start breaking the golden rules, you start messing with nature, and you're going to get hurt. And you probably should. So let's be mindful of the message that he sent. And let's just be good to each other, and let's respect each other, let's enjoy our lives, and let's enjoy the conference championship this weekend, because they are going to be doozies. You've been listening to the Sport Diehards for Radio AFS. I've been your host, Steve Itzkowitz. We've brought to you by Gallagher's. We'll be back next Monday responding to the championship games over the weekend and NFL and the NFL championship weekend and start the preview of the Super Bowl. We won't go into a full preview. We'll do that the following week. But we'll go into a brief preview of the Super Bowl, early storylines coming out, so on and so forth. So that'll be next week. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for tolerating me. And thank you for listening to Radio AFS. Catch the Fallout Shelter tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. with my man A-Bomb. And also catch Tay Holloway on the Sports Elite, I believe, on Wednesdays. Or maybe that's Thursday. I'm not sure which one. Go to RadioAFS.com. Check out the lineup. We got a lot of great shows on here. We've got a lot of really great shows on hockey, on MMA, on team sports such as mine, the Beating Drum on Friday with Jacob Ovette, who's administrator of the Radio AFS network, and also the Fallout Shelter with Avon tomorrow, the Ultimate Trash Talking Show. Kim Dunning and Jimmy with the show Stay Out of My Crease, which is a show about hockey. A lot of diversity. So go to RadioAFS.com and take note of the show times for each show. A lot of great shows on this particular network. You've been listening to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. I've been your host, Steve Itzkowitz. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next Monday. Enjoy championship weekend in the NFL. Have a great, great short work week. Make it productive. And always remember, ladies and gentlemen, sports is everything. This is why we do what we do. Have a good evening.